One, you have to have leadership. You have to have someone that's willing to champion this and to provide everybody to come to the table to work in a collaborative method. The second part that we're hearing is understanding what's not working, that you can't work in the silos. You can't look at your own institution, your own program. You can't be just looking at your own agency, that you have to be working with the whole system from the very beginning, before somebody is even arrested, to the time somebody is coming out of the system, or it's going to be a revolving door. We're also hearing that you have to use evidence-based practices, that you have to change the paradigm of looking at risk management. You have limited resources, where do you put it? Do you put it towards the low risk or put it to the high risk, and what's your best outcome that you're going to be receiving for that? And I'm hearing that the hardest part is the change, the cultural change within any agency within the criminal justice system, that you're going to have to require new training, new methodologies, new ways of thinking of how to have success. And that's probably one of the hardest parts of themselves, is not just looking at the change for the inmates or the offenders, but your own staff of how they work in the current system itself. So with that, let's take it to the next level, which is with the executive level of the officials. And that's Maureen Walsh, the chairperson of the Massachusetts Parole Board, Harold Clark, the Commissioner of the Department of Corrections, Mike Ash, the Sheriff of Hampton County, and Michael, and I'll kill this, thank you, Director, Bureau of Substance Abuse Services for Massachusetts with the Department of Public Health. So if we could start with Maureen Walsh, and again, there's five speakers, and we have approximately about 30 minutes of time, so about 5 minutes, 6 minutes each. That's not possible. No. And so we're asking. We're doing the. We're going to ask the to do the impossible possibly. So we'll have some fun with it. So, Maureen.
Great. Well, if the record would reflect that Commissioner Clark took 1 minute of my time, then
so noted.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming here and listening to what we have to say about this very important public safety issue. My name is Maureen Walsh. I have the great honor to be the chairperson of the Parole Board and have an opportunity to work with many of the individuals here at the table on what I think is one of the most important social issues facing Massachusetts as well as every state in the nation, which is prisoner reentry. The difficult part of the job is not that we don't know what to do. I think actually Massachusetts is fortunate in that we have some of the best practices. We have some of the best leaders in the executive branch under the leadership of Secretary Burke. We have leaders in the legislative field, and we have great think tanks. What we need to do is to make the next step in this logical progression. We know that the numbers are immense and enormous as far as cost to the society, numbers of offenders basically pouring out of our institutions. And yet we've seen from models in Hampton County that are tried and true what good reentry does and how the community to come together to solve the problem. Very briefly, from a parole perspective, I can tell you that we did take significant steps to change the way in which we look at offender reentry. And I would beg to differ on the soft on crime, tough on crime analysis, because we all, I think, in this room know that the federal system is always known as being extremely punitive, and yet they provide housing for their offenders as they're leaving prison. Massachusetts is embarking on efforts in pockets to do such a thing, and we have the resources to study now, again, with the support of the legislature, exactly how that makes an impact upon the safety of the community. We know the profile, if you will, of offenders leaving incarceration. And luckily, it's something that, together, I think that we can work on. Very briefly, what we did with the cooperation and collaboration of the Department of Corrections is that we started to look at some of the things that need to be changed in Massachusetts, and one of them was the issue of so many offenders leaving without supervision, upwards of 50% of state offenders. And we created an approach which was very collaborative called the Regional Reentry Centers. And so no longer do we say they're not our problem, they're not Department of Corrections' problem, they leave anonymously. We provided them with opportunities, and we provided them with some assistance, again, in the absence of mandatory post-release supervision, which I think is a necessary next step as we progress down this road. And the Bureau of Substance Abuse provided us with substance abuse counselors, and we were provided with some funding through the legislature to provide them with transitional homes. And I can tell you that we have reduced in that population recidivism by 33%. And it's no surprise with stable employment and stable housing that the wellness of the offender in the community gets better. So I think I'm up to about my 5 minutes. I'm looking forward to what people have to say, but thank you for making parole a part of the solution instead of a part of the problem.
Thank you. Harold Clark.
Thank you. Good morning. I am very, very pleased to be here to be a part of this very important conference or gathering. And I want to thank Community Resources for Justice and also the Crime and Justice Institute for convening this very important meeting. You know, I am fortunate to have worked prior to coming to Massachusetts in two places where one, reentry was being practiced before it was even spoken about. It was just something that was done because we felt that the things that we were doing were necessary to get good results, and that was in Nebraska. I can recall as a young lad starting in the system as a counselor, there was an STP program, a skill trainings program, that provided all type of programming for offenders, and there's no reason why Nebraska, back in 1997, boasted one of the lowest rates of recidivism in the country of 18.8%. Since then, they've gotten tough in crime, and they've slipped a little bit. And today, they're still right about 22-23% their rate of recidivism, which is very, very good. But I then had the privilege of moving on to the state of Washington. And while in Washington, the state made a commitment to support reentry. And the model that Dale Parent spoke about and others is actually something that was played out in Washington. When I got there, I realized that for the previous 10 years that we had been going in the wrong direction in terms of recidivism, and we had increased about 9% within a 10-year period, and we figured something had to give. So the legislature had required or mandated that the Washington State Institute for Public Policy conduct a longitudinal study of what works in corrections. And so the Institute spent a few years taking a look at that issue, and they took a look at every study that was conducted in the United States and only included those in their longitudinal study that met rigid scientific standards for research. And you may have seen the work that they have published in October of 2006. We used that information of what works to build a reentry program for the Department of Corrections in Washington. Before I go any further, I will say to you that we can sit and talk about reentry all day and talk about saving money. But before we can save the money, we have to make investments. You have to make investments in effective programming for reentry to actually work. You also need to take a look at policies that you're using to conduct business ordinarily and see, first of all, what shifts can be made in policies and practices to, first of all, get you to a higher plane. But then our experience in Washington was that beyond that, then you had to make investments in the department, you had to make investments in the community, you had to make investments with all of your partners to better position them to be able to get the results that we all aspire to receive. But as Dale Parent said, in Washington what we did, the model he used as well, is that reentry begins the day an offender enters the system. That's what we spoke about in Washington, but I believe personally that it should begin before that point. I believe that reentry should begin at the point that an offender is going through the legal system And before a judge sentences an offender, that judge ought to be taking a look at pre-sentence investigations and making sentencing decisions based on information before him or her. I think reentry for corrections is going to include, in most jurisdictions, resources to be able to respond, to position the department to be able to respond to the deficits that the offenders enter the system with. And when I speak of deficits, the report speaks very clearly to what I'm talking about: illiteracy, substance abuse, mental health issues. I don't need to go through all the numbers for you this morning, but I think those have been shared to some degree already. But we are facing many deficits, and unless the capacity exists within the DOCs to begin to respond to those deficits, those offenders will walk out and again reoffend once they're back into their communities. 97% of the offenders are leaving their systems today. They're not with us forever once they come to us, like a lot of folks would like to believe. And I could speak for a very long time on this, but I'd just like to share with you my philosophy and what I think correction environments ought to be like. And I sum it up in words that often causes people to shiver and shake when I say that I believe that correctional institutions ought to be healing environments. And I use those words purposefully. They ought to be healing environments in which offenders can enter and offenders can receive the services that they deserve that will help them to become better persons. And when I speak of healing environments, I'm not only speaking of the offenders. I'm also including staff in that as well, because many of our staffs come to us to work within institutions, and they're not prepared with the right mindset to get the job done. So we have to a large extent work on staff, work on culture, and do all those things before we can begin doing effective reentry with the offenders. Who owns the problem? We all own the problem. All the partnerships, the communities, and others. And I like to put in a punch of corrections in that. Offenders came to us with those deficits. Those deficits were not created in corrections. We need to accept that. And so the community need to understand that there are preventative things that can be done at the front end, and that we also need support from the community while offenders are incarcerated, and at the back end if we are going to be successful. I'm trying to speak real fast to get to all of this. But anyway, Mr. Moderator, I'll stop at this point because I'm sure you'll come back to me.
Absolutely. That's up to this group. So I won't take the blame for that. So thank you, sir. Sheriff Ash?
No, it's a great honor for me to be here, and I just want to start by thanking Crime and Justice and Community Resources for Justice, and they've been a partner with us for over 30, well, I've been sheriff for 33 years, and they've been a partner with me for a good, if you will, probably 30 years, you know, and it's just been a great relationship. And so I'm hearing the speakers, certainly Dale and Mark touched upon many of the key issues, and I just always feel that when you're preoccupied with the day-to-day operations, it's great to have a forum like this to bring us all together, because one of the things we're always talking about is partners and collaborations and how do you make it happen and so on. But in that regard, I just feel very blessed at this particular point that I like to feel that the stars are lined up right in our state. You know, first of all, we have a very able governor who, in my opinion, gets this. He sees that significance of, on one hand, challenging inmates, and the other aspect of, if we're going to challenge inmates, is the importance of reentry. And I feel really honored, you know, to be working with the Secretariat, Kevin Burke, and Mary Beth Heffernan from Public Safety. They get it, and they carry out the mission, if you will, in the vision of the governor. And certainly it's a joy working with the new Commissioner of Corrections, Harold Clark, and obviously you've had a long relationship with Maureen Walsh as well. I think things like, I like to start by talking about being firm but fair and having a sense of strength reinforced with decency. You know, if we value people, it's one thing to say the word, but it's another thing to carry out, if you will, the policies and so on in that regard. Mark and Dale and the speakers have touched upon the profile of an inmate. You know, it was so important. And when we look at that fifth grade education, 20% of the county inmates obviously have severe mental issues, 85% with substance abuse, 93% lack any kind of marketable skill. So it's almost when you look at it, you say, geez, this is overwhelming. And what I'm so pleased about is all the people on this dais, we believe that change can happen. And we start by, at least in our case, is just has been said by all the speakers, as reentry starts day one. And to me, that's so important. And I'll give you some examples of that aspect of respect is, that, you know, first of all, using evidence-based assessment tools like a level service inventory, looking at being able to test out the mental health, educational, substance abuse aspects, and finding out, first of all, individualizing that inmate and mapping out programs for them. One of the things that has happened at our particular facility is in Hennepin County Jail and House of Correction over the years, and we have, being a sheriff for 33 years, it's been an involvement, it's been a process. Certainly what I'm talking about here today didn't start overnight, although we've always had this philosophy about reentry and seeing incarceration is, if you will, of trying to take advantage of that adversity and trying to challenge and motivate inmates in that of a sense of their failure, if you will, and coming in with what I always say, the handcuffs and the leg irons and the paddy wagon, and trying to use that to turn them around. And as I always say, nomenclature in our business is so important because of, obviously, the public safety aspect. And so the word I always like doing or using is the word challenging inmates. And we challenge them by certainly laying out this process. And one of the things that used to occur at our place, they would come in, go through orientation, and then there would be a long period before they would be able to get into a program. And what we did was we then turned this around so that we could let the inmates see right from day one that we were all business, and we introduced mandatory required program. We introduced a 5-week program that after orientation, all inmates, to show that we believe reentry starts from day one, is that following that 24, 72-hour orientation, that then would go into a mandatory 5-week program that would focus in on criminogenic factors such as I've outlined, education, substance abuse, anger management, cognitive thinking, these kind of thing. Now, when we introduced that, the staff said, we're going to have a riot. And just the opposite occurred. You know, they could see that we meant business, and they could see that we cared. And then during that 5-week program, we then mapped out individual service plans for every inmate, looking at the remedial education, GED, vocational training, and then challenged them in that regard. And when I say challenge them, I mean not just showing up for classes, but they had to fill out journals. They had to participate. They had to contribute in that way. And today, we enjoy about 60% of our inmates are in lower security in terms of the step-down. And it clearly shows from a recidivism factor that the step-down program is a much safer approach in that reintegration. Just two aspects to the step-down, in addition to the pre-release centers and so on. In 1986, we introduced the day reporting. We were the first in the nation. We've had thousands of inmates involved in day reporting, and it's been overwhelmingly successful. And if you will, not only reducing recidivism, but also, if you will, making the streets and neighborhoods safe, which is the key aspect of what we're all about. We did receive enormous help back in 1985. Crime and Justice participated in that with the establishment of our Western Massachusetts Correctional and Substance Abuse Center. It's the first time in the 350-year history of sheriffing that we're doing treatment, you know, for substance abuse. And today, one out of three judges that commit somebody to a jail, recommend that, in terms of services. So it's tremendously successful. Again, we've had thousands of inmates go through that, and it's in the last phase of that, it ties into an AA concept, and again, bringing the community in and bringing sponsorships. I would just like to also focus in on what we talk about partners, collaborations. I cannot emphasize this enough, that we have over 268 partners, and in terms of working with community agencies. I know when we first went out to the community agencies, there was a feeling of resentment because of the, quote, industrial prison complex that's been developed, if you will, over the years. But once we begin to knock down these barriers, great partnerships developed, and certainly working with the mentally ill, working with human services in terms of establishing halfway houses and these kind of things, and so on. The other key aspect, and it's been mentioned here, this new paradigm that I'm certainly excited about. Certainly the chief, Ed Davis here in Boston, has worked with crime and justice. Remember back when he was chief in Lowell, and that's why I'm very, very excited, not only having Governor Deval Patrick and having great partners on this dais that we work with, but also locally. I have a new police chief in Springfield that gets this, and these are the two key urban areas, is both Springfield and Holyoke in terms of the Hampden County, and in terms of intelligence, developing a neighborhood watches, monitoring this whole aspect of tracking inmates back into the community. And we just have great partnerships and great collaborations, along with working with parole, probation, and the nonprofits, private sector, and empowering citizens. So I'm very, very excited about the future, and just very, very pleased to be here, and look forward to any questions and so on that you have. Thank you.
Thank you. Just a reminder, in your packet you have those index cards to write down your questions, your comments, and your concerns, so that you can pass them on to Ling. So on the second half, we can have those answered, and also filling out the discussion question sheet that will also, if you could return that at the end, to the registration desk, that those will be answered and put on their website. So, next is Michael.
I'm going to start with a little bit of history here, because I think it's actually pertinent today. In the earlier part of the decade, when the Commonwealth and the nation was in its last economic recession, there were some strategic decisions made. At that point, in terms of cuts to health and human service programs to support other areas. And health and human service programming always seems to take disproportionate hits as we recession comes around. And what happened as a result of those combined cuts was we lost about 50% of our publicly funded detox beds, as well as a wide variety of other services that we had in place, many of which we're restoring today. But what happened to change the conversation was not the health and human service advocates coming to the table. It was actually the both state and local public safety folks coming to the table, underscoring the impact at a community level. Law enforcement folks are saying, I am arresting the same people five times when I know that they should be in treatment and there's no bed available for them. Our correctional folks and our county systems were saying, we are inundated with folks who we know belong in your treatment system. As a result of that, that money was restored, and then Governor Romney asked us, the department as a convening authority, to develop a strategic plan for substance use services in the Commonwealth. And as a result of that, 3 years ago we released a strategic plan that had six areas of focus. I'm not going to talk about all of them, but three of them are, I think, pertinent to the discussion today. The first one was leadership. And so the first goal, Governor Romney issued an executive order to establish a governor's council on substance abuse and prevention. And many of the people, Christine Cole was there at the time, but many of the people in this room actually sit on that panel. So we have key decision makers sitting at that panel. The second was really focusing on evidence-based services and outcome-driven decision making. which I think is important today. And the other piece, the prime area of relevance today was a real focus on criminal justice services. One, how do we divert people from the criminal justice system rather than incarcerating them? Two, how do we provide adequate services for those who are incarcerated around substance abuse and mental health? And third was around reentry. How do we provide comprehensive reintegration services? And I agree with Sheriff Ash that I think the stars are aligning and some things have changed, which we've kind of talked about today. But fully, when we look at the substance abuse, and the priority for us is about 30% of our treatment system now are folks involved with the criminal justice system. We've had a 70%, and consciously 70% increase in residential admissions from folks coming from our correctional facilities, and that continues to improve. The other piece, I don't know if folks saw the Globe, the lead story in the Globe today, but there's a significant human toll, too, that the Commonwealth has been experiencing a huge increase in fatal opioid-related overdoses. And we know that many of those people are coming from our correctional facilities, that we know that unless folks hooked up for treatment, that they're at highest, that they're the highest risk for fatal overdoses. And so, I left actually a copy of the update on the strategic plan and really want to thank the strong partnership of many people up here in terms of the things. And I do agree that the stars are aligning in significant ways. And I want to kind of throw out a couple challenges and opportunities that I think we need to embrace here in Massachusetts. We've talked about some of the public policy implications. I think it's time that our correctional facilities are not our de facto mental health and substance abuse treatment systems. We need better data integration. We've been talking with our partners at EOPS in terms of making sure that we have an adequate client-level understanding of what's happening within our system. Sustainability of efforts. It's time to move from pilots and pockets to systemic changes, both at the policy and the service level. Sustainability is key. I don't want to be back here, in 6 years basically saying we're restoring some of the same things we took offline in coming years. I think we need to do a better job. One of the issues that we haven't talked about is community support. And as we've expanded services, particularly those who are coming from our correctional facilities, our communities say, not in my backyard. And so I think one of the things that we need to focus on, what's the value not only at the state level but at the community level for these services? We need to do a better job at advocacy, and I implore you to be champions of substance abuse treatment services, as well as public safety advocates, and I will be as well for you. The other issue is, I think, and I know that there's been lots of talk around housing initiatives here in the Commonwealth, but also that we have a responsible CORI policy to make sure that particularly those with substance abuse histories who have evidence of rehabilitation are not denied the opportunity for housing and employment. So I'll just end there.
Tremendous. Overall, we're hearing some constant themes, and again, the same value is being repeated over and over.